Tom Woods Show, episode 1976.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, don't even think about missing the libertarian event of the year. The 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, live in Orlando, featuring many of your favorites from The Tom Woods Show. And Michael Malice says his special surprise guest, whose identity I myself don't even know, will bring the house down. Cost nothing to attend. Register at tomwoods2000.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Well, today I want to visit a topic that you might think I don't need to cover, but I'm covering it not so much to refute an argument that seems hardly to need refutation, as to just let you know about the existence of a part of the libertarian world that you may not be aware of, and I'm sure you're much happier not being aware of it. As I finished up yesterday's episode, I mentioned that the head of the social media person for the Libertarian Party of Texas tweeted that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is more libertarian than Thomas Massie. Now, I don't know where you could possibly get that, except possibly on immigration. But even there, even if you implemented everything Massie recommends, the United States would still have one of the most liberal immigration policies in the whole world. And of course, immigration is a contested issue among libertarians. John Hospers, the very first presidential nominee for the LP, is not an open borders guy. In fact, TomWoods.com/1976, I'll post what he's written about it. And it doesn't sound like these people. Now, you could say, well, he's wrong about that. Well, okay, maybe he's wrong about that. But he was actually the nominee of the Libertarian Party. And indeed, there are numerous other high-profile, very accomplished libertarians who have disputed that under present conditions, with state ownership of everything, that so-called open borders is the market approach to this question, as opposed to just political decentralization as far down as you can get it, to try to approximate the best we possibly can what a free market order would really look like. But anyway, how about we'll stipulate for the sake of argument that AOC is better than Thomas Massie on immigration. Let's even stipulate that. That even though Massey's favorite approach to immigration, as I say, would still leave the United States with one of the most liberal immigration policies in the world, that's not enough. And we need AOC. Okay, let's grant you that. Let's start with the Green New Deal. Okay, the Green New Deal is a sweeping economic transformation of the United States within 10 years that would get the United States off fossil fuels within 10 years, and that in the course of doing so would radically transform the economy in a pro-intervention direction. I won't even use the word socialist, okay? I'll be a super sport here. They say this: the plan for a Green New Deal shall recognize that a national industrial economic mobilization of this scope and scale, which, by the way, involves retrofitting every building in the United States, the whole thing is, it's unbelievably insane when you read it. I've done a couple episodes on it. I'll link to those on the show notes page. The plan for a Green New Deal shall recognize that a national industrial economic mobilization of this scope and scale is a historic opportunity to virtually eliminate poverty in the United States and to make prosperity, wealth, and economic security available to everyone participating in the transformation. Is the mobilization of all these things, that sound like a free market approach to you? Or is it the worst possible kind of central planning and government direction and cracking skulls? And not to mention, notice the unbelievable misunderstanding. Now, I'm being generous here in assuming that it's a misunderstanding as opposed to just flat-out propaganda. Let's take her at her word and her colleagues here and assume that they just don't understand what they're doing when they say that by imposing unprecedented requirements on the U.S. economy and on economic actors, we will eliminate poverty of all things. Now, you would think that if we truly are in an extraordinary world historic emergency, that in order to combat a problem of that scale, you would think that it would be obvious that we'll have to expend an enormous amount of resources and we'll therefore have to be temporarily satisfied with a lower standard of living. Labor and capital have to be diverted away from satisfying consumer demand and toward projects designed just to maintain civilization in existence while we're doing this. But no, they're claiming that by expending all these resources, we'll get richer. This is the kind of fallacy that no libertarian should want to have any truck with, right? We should want to oppose this vocally, not to mention the destruction of industrial civilization that would accompany the implementation of this program. Oh, that's a small detail. She's 25% better on immigration than Thomas Massie. There won't be anybody left to immigrate if this plan were implemented everywhere, but she's better than he is. Okay. Now, imagine an asteroid is hurtling toward Earth. The Green New Deal people, by their logic, would have to say, preparing for the impact of this asteroid is going to make us richer. Now, then imagine that the asteroid just burns up in the atmosphere and the crisis passes. In order to be consistent, they would have to be disappointed. They'd have to say, well, I guess we're going to have to be poorer now that we don't have to plan for the asteroid coming. What? We'll obviously be richer now that we don't have to expend all these resources on defending against the asteroid. Anyway, again, I can't imagine even remotely wanting to be associated with somebody spreading these kinds of fallacies. When I asked Patrick Moore, who spent 9 years as president of Greenpeace Canada and another 6 as a director of Greenpeace International about this, I asked him, you had a pithy response to the Green New Deal proposal from AOC. What was that? And he said, well, my pithy response was that it would cause an immediate collapse of the agricultural system worldwide if it was adopted worldwide and would result immediately, beginning in the center of the large metropolises, in starvation and death and cannibalism, no doubt, as it spread outwards, to end up with only a few subsistence farmers surviving in the wild. So that's my take on it. If we just instantly implemented it, which is pretty quick, 10 years is pretty much instantly. And Moore goes on to say this. But at one point, she said, I'm the only one who's come up with a plan that can deal with the scope of this problem, so I'm in charge and the rest of you are just in the cheap seats. And then not long after that, she said, I'm the boss in one of her little clips. That got my hackles up, so I tweeted out, you pompous little twit, you don't have a plan to feed 8 billion people without using fossil fuels. There are these things called tractors, and there are these other things called semi-trailers that need to carry 40 tons of food at a time into the inner cities in all our metropolises, where there's not enough room to grow the food for the people in the 60-story high-rises. And without fossil fuels, this system would break down and immediately result in mass death. And in addition to that, if we quit fossil fuels tomorrow, there wouldn't be a tree left on this planet within a very short time. Is that the future we want for human civilization? To absolutely decimate the entire global environment for firewood to cook and heat our homes, which is what would happen with this many people? I have very, very good discussions about this with Alex Epstein from the Center for Industrial Progress and Patrick Moore. Link to those on the show notes page. You can get more details. But I assume most people listening don't need me to convince them that the Green New Deal is a catastrophically bad idea. It is inconceivable that there is anything in Thomas Massie's record that could match the scale of the suffering that this would bring about. And incidentally, Epstein was called to testify before a House committee involving energy and having to do with Puerto Rico. And he explained that Puerto Rico has a per capita income of about $13,000. And their energy expenses for the average family are already 3 times what the rest of us have in the 50 states. And AOC wants to make it even more expensive. She wants to cripple their access to inexpensive energy. And so he explained it to her. He went through the numbers. He says, this is unavoidable. You are going to contribute to the further suffering of these people, and you're not going to even have anything to show for it. It's not like, well, on the other hand, we'll keep the global temperature from rising. This won't even have any effect on anything. Won't be noticeable in any way. All you will be doing is making these people suffer, and none of it registered with her at all. Now, these people who say AOC is such a great libertarian, the best they can come up with, if they're even aware of this stuff, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume they just don't know anything about AOC. They heard a speech she gave about immigration or something, but they can't possibly know this, right? They can't. But I would say if they did, the best they could come up with would be, because I did actually see somebody say this, you know, she and the squad are, you know, they get some economic things wrong, but it is great to hear libertarian ideas coming from people other than white males. Yeah, because the squad is really deeply read in the libertarian literature. And you'll notice, incidentally, that virtually nobody making this claim, and very few of the blue-pilled, left-leaning libertarians come from an economics background, almost none. Most of them are embarrassed by Austrian economics because they're embarrassed by anything that's not more or less in the mainstream, because they want to be part of the cool kids, but they want to be just slightly different enough to feel good about themselves. I'm not exactly like everybody else, but when push comes to shove, I'll side with everybody else against the hardcore libertarians. So you won't hear them talking about the Austrian School of Economics or the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve is also a source of embarrassment for these people as an issue for libertarians. That's embarrassing, you see, because people on MSNBC aren't criticizing the Fed. On CNN, they're not criticizing the Fed. The New York Times editorial board doesn't criticize the Fed. So it would be embarrassing for us and crankish for us to talk about how central banks contribute to the business cycle. We can't talk about that. So the entire libertarian worldview stemming from self-ownership and the non-aggression principle. By the way, the non-aggression principle is also embarrassing to a lot of these people. In the old LP of Nevada, they used to be embarrassed by the non-aggression principle. That's so unsophisticated. I mean, we can't have such simplistic principles. We have to have nuance. And okay, great. Yeah, that sounds like that'll be a successful political program, starting off by emphasizing all your nuances. Great. Yeah, that'll get us somewhere. Our view of libertarianism, which is pretty much the standard one, is that you own yourself, certain implications follow from this. The non-aggression principle is central to what we believe. And obviously, you don't have to be an Austrian economist to be a libertarian. There's no reason, there's no necessary connection, although I have argued in the past for why the two mesh together so well. Even though the Austrian School of Economics is value-free, it doesn't say you should do this or you should do that. So strictly speaking, there is no Austrian position on what central bank policy should be or what the minimum wage should be. That's not what the Austrian School does. It describes what will happen if you do A or B, but it doesn't tell you to do A or B. But all the same, you can see a clear compatibility, because what is implied by Austrian economics is that if you value human welfare, then you will value a laissez-faire economy and the international division of labor and peace and commerce and capital accumulation. Making libertarianism entirely into self-expression and I gotta be me is a little bit of a degradation of what libertarians' primary principles are. No one's going to stop you. Go ahead and be the person you want to be. No one's stopping you. But we have this amazing, incredible, sweeping worldview that comes to us from Mises and Rothbard and some of the greats. And well, that's what we're going with. And by the way, some of these people like to try to claim Mises because they, on some level, they know he was a great. So they'll say, your radar should go off when you hear them saying, Mises was a cosmopolitan, and he wasn't like the terrible people who claim his name today, like the Mises Caucus of the Libertarian Party or the Mises Institute. Well, if you look into Mises' views, they were not exactly the views of the people claiming him today, whether it had to do with feminism or abortion or a variety of other things. This is the Mises who, remember, was a member of the editorial advisory board of the magazine of the John Birch Society. So this is the Mises they say was not an embarrassment to us, but Rothbard was a crank or whatever. Rothbard's contributions to libertarianism are 800 billion times greater than all these people's combined if they had 1,000 lifetimes. If you look at Murray Rothbard and what he accomplished with his book on the Great Depression, which is an absolute game changer, and I hate that stupid expression, Paul Johnson referred to it copiously in his tremendous work, Modern Times, in explaining what went wrong in the 1920s. That it was not that in 1929 the Federal Reserve didn't act enough. What? The Federal Reserve didn't act enough? That's your thesis? That's the thesis of the Chicago School people. And I presume, again, I don't know if they have the economic knowledge to come to a conclusion, but I guess that must be what these blue-pilled libertarians say. No, the opposite, of course, is true. The Fed did too much. It was intervening too much in the 1920s. Or Rothbard's book, Man, Economy, and State. That kept the Austrian school alive And everyone who attended the South Royalton Conference in 1974 that really revived and got the Austrian school going, they had all read and profited from Man, Economy, and State. And in numerous places, Mises himself spoke about the importance of that work and the significance of Rothbard himself. So if you're going to tell me how great Mises was, then I guess you have to also take Mises' endorsement repeatedly, over and over again, and in the highest possible praise of Rothbard. Rothbard stayed anti-war at a time when just about all his free market allies abandoned him on that issue. And at tremendous personal and professional expense, he simply abandoned the various outlets he had written for and spoken for so that he could stay true to libertarian principles on that issue. I am not so sure that people with their comfortable think tank jobs would today do that. Not to mention, Rothbard's book, For a New Liberty, introduces libertarianism to the general public. His book, The Ethics of Liberty, explores the implications of the non-aggression principle. His scholarly articles on so many issues, ranging from air pollution to epistemology, are of the highest importance. Not to mention a 2-volume history of economic thought, a 5-volume history of colonial America. I mean, come on. The critics of Rothbard, if they had 100 lifetimes, they wouldn't amount to 1 fingernail of Rothbard. All right, before I continue along in this demolition, let me share with you a message from a really great and helpful sponsor that really, really will help all you business folks out there, and that's Persist SEO. Because if you're getting buried by your competition online, you can build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO. If you're a small local business and you're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, you can increase your visibility with Persist SEO. Or if you're not getting leads coming in on a consistent basis or just a handful, well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move that needle to a more prosperous business model. Or what if you're tired of cold calling? Who the heck likes cold calling? Well, use your website as a lead generation engine. Or what if you're not showing up for your services on Google or other search engines in your area? Will get found on Google with their expert search engine optimization. So all you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. Now, what else is wrong with AOC? I got on a little tangent there. All right, she thinks the Scandinavian countries are what we should copy because the Scandinavian countries show what we can do when we have less of a market economy and so on and on. So she's completely confused about that and is spreading a detestable myth. I've covered this multiple times on the Tom Woods Show. In fact, what I'm going to do is refer you to an ebook I wrote called AOC is Wrong: The Upside Down World of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You can pick that up for free at aociswrong.com, and you'll get elaboration on every single point that I'm making here. So we've talked about the Sweden myth, and Sweden goes to show that if you have a big welfare state, X, Y, and Z follow. Almost every aspect of the story of the Scandinavian countries and why they're superior to our system is wrong. Almost every aspect of that is wrong. And I've covered that, as I say, multiple times and in that book. Then about healthcare. You think AOC is looking for a laissez-faire doctor-patient relationship in healthcare and the removal of suffocating bureaucracy that has destroyed that and led to premature retirements of doctors and all kinds of other problems, the Obamacare fiasco. You think she wants to repeal all that? You think that's what's going on there? So, all right, so she wants a government takeover of the healthcare system. So apparently even that can be excused because she's 25% better on immigration than Thomas Massey. So even that, the taking over of a gigantic chunk of the U.S. economy, that's okay. The Medicare for All policy, which is an absolute fiasco. So again, I cover this stuff in the ebook. And in particular, instead of just criticizing AOC, I put forward some positive suggestions about the way forward from a liberty perspective. So for example, I talked to Dr. Josh Umber, who operates a concierge family practice and who also advises doctors about making the transition to direct primary care, whereby they bypass insurance and government. So he does that, and we talk about that. So I asked him to describe what his system is like. He says, in our system, we start with the idea that we have insurance for the wrong things. We don't have car insurance for gasoline or homeowners insurance for lawn care. Why have health insurance for family medicine, the bulk of what most people need? And he says, and we were able to remove that middleman, the third-party payer. We structured it a little differently on the billing side, so it's a flat rate per month in his office, based on age, just like a gym membership. And for that membership, you get unlimited home visits, work visits, office visits, technology visits, like email, cell phone, texting, Twitter, Facebook, Skype, basically whatever we want, because now we're not limited to what insurance will allow or pay for. Then we have no copays in our office. Any procedure we can do in the office is included free of charge because that's what the membership is covering, just as any equipment in the gym is included at the base membership price. So stitches, biopsies, joint injections, ultrasounds, bone scans, lung scans, urine testing, strep throat testing, minor surgical procedures, all included for free. Something else we do that makes this very unique and valuable is wholesale medications, labs, imaging, and pathology. We had a perfect example recently. We ordered some blood work. We have our negotiated cash discounts of usually 95%. And a patient's blood work was accidentally billed through the insurance rate because of a computer mistake at the lab. The price that they were quoted was $1,028. We ran that back through our system and it cost $39, a 97% savings just by cutting out the middleman. We can do the same things with medications. We outcompete the Walmarts, the CVSs, the Targets of the world because we have a different business model. We can dispense medications in Kansas just like a pharmacist. 44 states allow physicians to function like this. I can order the medications wholesale from the same places the pharmacies do, but I can get 1,000 blood pressure pills for $8.33. Even after my 10% markup, they're under a penny a pill. Walmart would literally have to give them away to outcompete us. And if they do, great, we still win. It's not a value that's a revenue generator for us. We're adding to the value of the membership. And then he goes on and on and on from there. So get this ebook, AOCiswrong.com, and you'll read more about Dr. Umber. Now, what have we heard about direct primary care, which is the best free market solution we can come up with under the present constrained system? What have we heard about that from AOC? Of course, not a word. Not a word. That's not even on her radar. I doubt she's even aware of it. It would shock me if she was even aware of this. But that's okay. We can overlook that. She buys into every single myth imaginable about the free society. So she buys into the alleged wage gap between men and women. This is absolutely an embarrassment. And I am quite sure there are some left-leaning libertarians who themselves believe in it. It's an embarrassment if you believe in that. The gist of it is this. Women earn only X number of cents on the dollar that men earn for doing the same work. It's not for doing the same work. It is absolutely not for doing the same work. For doing the same work, there's already the Equal Pay Act of 1963 that covers that. It's not doing the same work. That's the point. Women do different work than men, and some of it has to do with the fact that some women leave the job force at some point to become mothers, and that forecloses some lines of work, some occupations, where if you were to leave the job force for 5 years, you would come back and you would not have the knowledge necessary to keep up with where the profession has gone. Or you need jobs that are convenient in terms of work hours and schedules around school schedules for the children. So there are professions that are attractive to women for that reason. But even we leave that aside, when you look at the way they measure it, they compare so-called full-time female workers, full-time male workers. When you actually look at it more closely, you realize they're defining full-time as 35 hours or more. Okay, well, way, way more men than women work 45 hours or more than women do. Okay, so way more men than women are working considerably higher than 35 hours a week, but they're still counting it as the same job. So a woman at 35 hours and a man at 45 hours, they're still looking together at the results of that, even though the men are working longer hours and obviously earning more money. So you factor out a lot of this, and then you're down to a 12-cent gap between men and women. Well, you know what institution also had a 12-cent wage gap between men and women? The Obama White House. And when this was brought to their attention, the press secretary's response was, well, men and women do different things in the White House here. Exactly right. But for some reason, that excuse is all right in the public sector, but you'd get killed in the private sector for that. So AOC spreads this nonsense. And apparently we can overlook that because she's from their point of view, 25% better on immigration than Thomas Massey, who does not spread any myth about any of this because he has a higher IQ. Let's just put it that way. He has a higher IQ. He's smarter. Without a doubt, he's smarter. Then it's tax the wealthy more. Now, look, obviously, there are some wealthy people who got their wealth disreputably, and those people I am not interested in defending. We all understand that. But at the same time, let's not be naive. This is not a distinction that AOC is making. She's not saying, well, the crony capitalists shouldn't be relieved of their tax burden, but people who earned their money cleanly and honestly, show me where she makes that distinction. She doesn't. It's the mere having of more than she thinks you should have that is the problem. And so again, she appeals to every destructive myth imaginable. Well, in the old days, we had very high top marginal tax rates. Yeah, when we had those really high top marginal tax rates in the 1950s, precisely 10,000 households in all of the United States were subject to them. And even those households, through loopholes and real estate deductions and tax evasion, were able to avoid paying them. So this is not like, well, we would just be getting back to the way things used to be. No, we would not. In the 1980s, when those top marginal rates were brought down, some of the loopholes were closed. So these things move in tandem. She wants to move the rate back up and not open the loopholes. This would be catastrophic for capital accumulation. And again, I never hear capital accumulation or capital or basic economic concepts discussed by the sort of people who think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the most libertarian member of Congress, or more libertarian than Thomas Massey. But I hear them constantly saying, she's the most libertarian member of Congress. She's obsessed with inequality per se. Inequality per se. Now, there are some inequalities that are brought about through state action. And the solution to that is to abolish the state action. But again, is she making a distinction like that? Is she particularly careful and nuanced about this? No, it's inequality per se. There's nothing wrong with inequality per se. And for a libertarian, this has nothing to do with the non-aggression principle or anything. Unless you're just an egalitarian and egalitarianism is more important to you than libertarianism. Okay, then abandon libertarianism already and just go out and be an egalitarian. Or she wants affordable housing without saying a word about the various government interventions that make housing not affordable. She proposed a national rent control scheme. Again, I mean, I don't understand how you can be a libertarian and not understand this. This is just basic stuff. Not only does that violate the non-aggression principle, but that's going to make any housing problem we have much worse for all the standard reasons. If there is a shortage of affordable housing, Walter Block makes the point just for the sake, he's not literally making this proposal, but just for the sake of making it easier for people to see, you would not want to impose rent control on low-income properties. To the contrary, in principle, if we weren't against the, again, it's just to help people, it's a thought experiment. What you would actually want to do is put price controls on literally everything in the world except low-income housing so that all the investment dollars would go into low-income housing, there would be more of it, and downward pressure would be placed on rents. So you would literally want to do the exact opposite of what she recommends. But we can overlook the fact that she would accentuate any housing problem we have and be also completely ignorant of the way government itself makes the problem worse because she's 25% better than Thomas Massey on immigration, according to them. Then she wants tuition-free public college. Again, a small matter, apparently. That's a small thing because she's marginally better than Thomas Massey on the only issue that they seem to follow. Now, this is one, again, where they don't want to really take a position on this because government schools and colleges are part of the American religion. I mean, they are the American church. And you think a blue-pilled libertarian is going to dare to be a heretic in that church? No way. So they can't run away from this issue fast enough. The fact is this, when you say, I want to subsidize more higher education, first of all, the blue-pilled libertarian thinks it's perfectly great, all the BS that's taught in these universities and the indoctrination and all that, because they believe in all those things. Whatever the left's current obsession is, these types of libertarians can't get on board fast enough. You can predict everything they're going to say and think on stuff like that. But basically what you're saying is people who went out and sought practical skills should have to subsidize my degree in worthless BS. Not to mention, you got to read Brian Kaplan's book, provocatively titled The Case Against Education, to see the results. The results are terrible. These institutions churn out absolute ignoramuses. The results are horrendous. If this were an entirely private program, we would never hear the end of it. We would not say we need to subsidize it further. It's a catastrophe. It's a catastrophic waste of resources for reasons that we discuss in the episode on that. But it's also in the ebook. Again, aociswrong.com. You're going to have all the information you need to smash all these things that, and you're going to have to smash them extra hard because the 38 left-leaning libertarians in the world are not spending their time on it. And by the way, where has AOC been on vaccine passports or on COVID in general? I think she's just gone for all the low IQ BS we've been fed for a year and a half. I think she believes in all of it, or at least she purports to believe in all of it. I think some of them in their private lives, they know this is nonsense. So they publicly, they say what they're supposed to say, and then they go live their lives. But she's basically endorsed all this stuff. None of it did a darn bit of good. Okay, none of it did a bit of good. And you can see that in the charts. And I put together some of these charts over at covidchartsquiz.com. And my favorite example, because it's so striking, is after Iowa lifted its state-level restrictions in early February 2021, well, we weren't going to hear the end of all the disasters that were going to strike. And of course, nothing happened. As any fool could have predicted, nothing happened. And in fact, remember, the mainstream media called Iowa the state that doesn't care if you live or die. And then when nothing happened, months later when they opened up, nothing happened. No retractions, no apologies, no nothing. Just more hysteria. I don't know what kind of brain function you'd have to just keep on going after you say something like this. The opposite happens, and you're on to the next hysteria. You don't stop and say, maybe this is a little less cartoonish than I thought. Maybe every big crowd is not a super spreader. I mean, maybe there's a higher IQ way of understanding all this, but not from AOC. Massey has been a hero standing up against all this stuff and the mandates and the nonsense. He has been a hero. He has, yes, I know this is absolute death to blue-pilled people. He has stood up against Dr. Fauci. He has stood up against the establishment and all the stuff that hasn't done a darn bit of good, but it's destroyed a lot of people's lives. It has created all kinds of horrendous health outcomes around the world because there are other things other than the monomaniacally obsessed about COVID. There are other things in the world too, like what's happened with cancer and missed cancer screenings and what's happened with in the developing world, literally millions of people over the next few years, even according to the New York Times, will die now unnecessarily from HIV, malaria, and tuberculosis because of this. And we could go on and on. I mean, I've talked a lot about the collateral damage of all this. Who's been talking about that? Did AOC say a word about any of those people? Do those people's lives matter? Not a word. What you get from AOC is pretty much the standard establishment line on just about everything. Now, she may stray from the establishment line a little bit to be 15% more socialist than the establishment line, but that's pretty much what you're going to get from AOC. And if you think that these issues she's bad on, which is 99% of what she talks about, are dispensable, it's regrettable that she has unfortunate opinions on these things. I don't know who you are, or I don't understand you, or what brand of libertarianism you're talking about, but it's not really one that exists. It's not really one that has a pedigree anywhere. So hooray for Thomas Massey, who, yes, dares to say things that are different from what you'll read on the New York Times editorial page. And I know for the blue-pilled out there, that defines what is good and reasonable and right and rational from everything that is backward and stupid and superstitious and red-pilled and all that. But believe it or not, there are some of us who think the New York Times does not have our best interests at heart. You know, some of us think that. It does not actually have our best interests at heart. And some of us think that a politician the establishment fawns over and Netflix makes a movie about can't possibly be good. That's a general principle. Can't possibly be good. That's how you know, by the way, when you look in history. Bill Clinton was asked, who was your favorite Republican president? He said, Teddy Roosevelt. Well, Newt Gingrich also likes Teddy Roosevelt. That's how you know he's a bad guy. Now, you can study history. You can read what I wrote about him in my 33 Questions About American History book, and you can get some details about that, what made him bad. But you know he's bad. That's a general rule. If you understand how American society works, there is never a time when Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton agree on something that's not evil in some way. Never. That is an impossibility. Likewise, if you have a politician that is fawned over in all establishment outlets, my gosh, I'd love to live in a world where that turned out to be a good person. I'd love to live in that blue-pilled world. That ain't the real world, though, folks. That is not the real world. The real world is represented right here on The Tom Woods Show. And if you like and support what I'm doing, head on over to supportinglisteners.com. Join the elite. Join the thinking libertarians who love the real libertarianism. And in return, I will give you a lot of great goodies over there at supportinglisteners.com. So head on over and do that, everybody, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.